The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, it feels so good, doesn't it? It just feels fantastic. Coming to you cordless, everybody. It's 11.02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8.02 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and here on the east side of the Mississippi River in downtown Minneapolis, it's 2 minutes after 10 p.m. Central Time. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night. This is show number 70. I got the count wrong a little bit last week, because it was on my, I was doing it off the top of my head, but I checked it this time, show number 70. And I'll tell you, so we've been, you know, I missed yesterday, and so we've been off for 4 days now. And I caught the beginning of Mark Levin's show on Fox News on Saturday night, and he was talking about the fact that he was off for 2 weeks. And he said, well, you know, he said, you think I like vacation, but I don't necessarily, because I'm still kind of doing the show anyway. And I am too. I got to admit, you know, so even on a standard week here, I have a 3-day weekend. You know, we do Thursday, Monday through Thursday. So I'm off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, do a show on Monday. I'm collecting news all weekend, which is the reason I started this Monologue Monday thing, because I got so much stuff to talk about by the time Monday night rolls around that I said, screw it. Let's not even book guests. Now, here's the amazing thing. We have this entire month of January booked up. Believe it or not, we already have most of February booked up. I'm on a roll. What can I tell you? But to accommodate that, I already booked a guest. I've already busted my rule. We booked a guest for Monday, February 12th. Matter of fact, it turns out it's Tim Conaway, who's, you know, running for president of the United States, you know, and he's been on a couple times, 2-3 times. We've been trying to have him on about every 6 weeks or so, talk about his campaign and that sort of thing. So, so I had to book him on Monday, and so what do I know, you know? So, So it's show number 70. Got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. I'm just going to go down the list here, but before that, I want to recognize our new sponsor, Conk News, at conk.com, C-O-N-K.com. Now, I can't stress this enough. If you're a news junkie, you got to check this out. Matter of fact, I was just looking at it. I was just reading the front page of Conk just before we got on here. I loaded it up. I'm going to show it to you in the middle of the show. You can't find a better news source anyway, because it's not one news source. It's 75 news sources rolled into one. And it's not just, you know, headlines and it's all automated. It runs off an algorithm. So they take the headlines from 75 different news sources, and they basically arrange them in chronological order, regardless of where they're from. So you will see, two articles from hotair.com next to an article from 100% Fed Up next to an article from National Review, and that's the way it works. You can't get a better overview of the news anywhere. We're really proud that these people are sponsoring us, Jeff Meyer and the people who are at Conk News. So that's Conk News at conk.com. Check it out when you can, okay? Very good. So what else do I got tonight? Okay, so tomorrow our guest is Murray Saber, an economist. We got a lot of questions for him. So he's been predicting on this show and everywhere else too. He writes for Forbes. He's on all sorts of different podcasts and radio shows all over the place. He's been predicting for about 2 years now that before Election Day 2024, that is sometime in the next 10 months, we're going to have a major recession here in the United States. There's a lot of people are starting to say, well, I have to qualify this. About a year ago, most economists thought the same thing. Now the tide is turning, and now most economists think the majority, I think we're going to have, or we're in the process of what's called, quote unquote, a soft landing, which means that we're going to avoid the recession that would normally have happened. However, there's other economists, a guy named Harry Dent in particular, who's pretty renowned. He thinks the entire U.S. economy is going to collapse. He thinks it's going to be way worse than a recession, even maybe way worse than a depression. That's what he thinks. So we got to talk to Murray about this. I want to see if he's revised his thinking. My guess is he hasn't, but still, we got to talk about a whole. But there's a whole bunch of shit going on regarding this Bidenomics crap, and this is the part I can't get over. I'm just going to mention this now. You know, we'll talk about this at length tomorrow. You know, Harry Dent's got a point. We have printed so much fake money in the past 3 years. I mean, gobs and gobs of it, way more than we've ever printed in another 3-year period in American history. I mean, the Biden administration is just making up money. They're just making it up. So what was that? Huh. All right. Okay, fine. I don't know what that was. Oh, dear. Okay. All right. So, yeah, they're just making shit up. And I can't understand why the economy wouldn't collapse at this point. I can't. I mean, it's not just that the debt has accumulated. We passed $34 trillion in debt like a week or two ago. But the really amazing thing is we passed over $100,000 in debt per American citizen. Every man, woman, and child in the United States who's a citizen anyway. I mean, we just added 8 million more people. That's another thing. That's on our list to talk about tonight. But 330 million Americans, we're all in hock for $100,000. And that we just ran over that threshold a couple weeks ago. So this is not good at all. We're going to talk to Murray about that later. Thursday night, Jazz Shaw joins us, my brother from another mother. So we're going to talk about the UFO stuff. He's completely connected in all that. We're going to talk about conservative politics from hotair.com. He's a weekend editor there. The fantastic publication. We're going to have David Strom on, the associate editor, the week after that. And the week after that, we've had Strom and Shaw regulars here. But the week after that, for the first time ever, we're having Ed Morrissey, the editor-in-chief of Hot Air, on. That'll be cool. That's really interesting. He runs a video podcast, kind of like this one. I think he does it weekly, if I'm right, or maybe twice a week. So we're looking forward to that, too. On next Thursday, January 18th, Stan Gordon, the legendary UFO researcher, investigator, is coming on. I mean, Stan is a huge, huge name in the UFO field, and Bigfoot now, too. And we had literally booked this, I think, 4 months ahead of time. And also, I hate to say this, he's coming on by phone only, so there won't be a picture. But still, he's going to be joining us, and we're going to talk about, you know, his claim to fame. And I know he's told me now, in setting up this interview, he's getting kind of tired of talking about it. But still, I told him, I said, we have to discuss this because you're kind of the horse's mouth of it at this point, that he was a 17-year-old kid living in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, when the Kecksburg UFO incident happened in December 1965. And so something, the U.S. Army says it was a meteor, but the people in the town, they saw this thing, said it was a crashed spacecraft that just came out of nowhere, and it had weird writing on it and no doors and no windows. And it crashed in the forest out right outside of Kecksburg, which is a tiny little town of about 3,000 people, I think, about 50 miles west of Pittsburgh, if I'm right. And he grew up there. He was 17 years old at the time. The other thing he told me, and of course I'm blowing this right now because I want you to hear it from him next week, is that I also mentioned the fact that John Hughes, the guy who was the program director at the radio station there, and you have to understand this, in 1965, radio was still a big deal, especially local radio. Most towns of any size had a radio station, and that was their primary media, unless they had a newspaper. Now, I grew up in Red Wing, Minnesota, and the interesting thing about Red Wing, Minnesota is that's where the National Editorial Association started. Red Wing has a huge history in newspapering and journalism, and it was for many years the smallest city in America with a legitimate, real daily newspaper. Not, you know, not a mimeographed one or coupons or any of that sort of shit. A real newspaper with a reporting staff and the whole bit. And that finally ended, I think, was it 2011? It finally went twice weekly, unfortunately. That's, you know, those are the times, you know. But for many, many years, including when I was growing up, and my family had some tie to the newspaper there, and that's one of the reasons I kind of got into some of this stuff, because I was, it kind of inspired me. And you know, we've talked about, I can't remember, I can't remember what guest we was talking about this with, about the fact that, you know, until about 1970, 1980, to make newspapers, they literally had to reset lead type every single goddamn day. It was the most, it's astonishing it was profitable. It was the single most absurd, ridiculous, time-consuming way to do media ever. They're laying out type with a little lead, and so you collected all the lead letters. I'm not kidding. This sounds like I'm joking. You collected all the lead lines of type every day and melted them and then did it over again, just like every single day. You know, crazy. Anyway, Stan Gordon's coming on. Now, what was I going to mention about the fact that John Hughes, the guy who was the program director for the local radio station there, he said he knew way more than he ever told anybody. He was going to do a special radio program for people in that region about what, quote-unquote, really happened, and the federal government stopped him, basically. So yeah, you tell me. Is that covering up? I don't know, you know. And he was apparently muzzled and bitter man for many, many years, well, 4 years, and in 1968-9, he changed his mind. He said, screw it, I'm going to do it anyway. He started telling family and friends he's actually going to do the thing he was originally going to do, and he ended up in a car accident and died a couple weeks later. Now, Stan told me, first of all, he told me two things. He did not actually know John Hughes, and I think that's interesting, because I think if you follow UFO lore, or, you know, a history at all, there's the assumption that they knew each other, and he said he did not know him. And secondly, he said he's never found any foul play involved in John Hughes' death, but, geez, I don't know, a lot of coincidences, man, you know? It's like, what do you say? Okay, so, you can call us, you go to jimandnight.com/call, this thing right down here, that URL, and press the big blue button at the top of the screen and adjust your camera and mic, and then you can get in the queue and talk to us. We don't have a guest tonight, so perfect time to do it. Now, I'm going to announce this for at least the next couple of weeks. Now, we got a new thing going on, too. You can text me live during the show at the same number here, 408-458-5088. I will get all text messages now, and I got a signed monitor here. As a matter of fact, that no noise was startling me. That was one of them. I have no idea what I got a text message here that just says blood. That's all it says. I have no idea what that is. I don't. But yeah, you can send me a text message during the show, and I will get them, and I will respond or something like that. We'll figure something out. All right. So I told you that we're booked up all this month for January and February too. And unfortunately, it already looks like Monologue Monday might go through the books. And this is Monologue Monday on Tuesday. So what are we talking about today? All right. I have such a long list. I'm just going to rattle this shit off, and it'll take me about an hour. Okay. All right. First thing, we just found out about 2 o'clock this afternoon, Central, maybe 3, that what Lloyd Austin was in, the Secretary of Defense, was when he was in the hospital for his prostate cancer. Now, I'm sure you followed this. He didn't tell anybody in the administration that he was going to the hospital. I think the assumption was, it sounds like it was going to be a very, very quick procedure, and he was going to go home, but there were complications, and he had to go back to the hospital, and he's still hospitalized. But it's not good. You know, I know there are people calling for his head. I don't know if that's, you know, if it's that serious. I know, but the fact of the matter is, this is still not good. I mean, he's the Secretary of Defense, and we got wars going on. And the fact that nobody, it's not just nobody could have gotten a hold of him. Nobody knew where he was for like 4 days. You know, Jesus, you know, and John Kirby, and I'm going to got to get to that too. You know, he said, well, you know, Biden is still in charge of the military, and that's true. You know, but still, it's, you know, I mean, I don't know, these people, they just kind of smell incompetent. It's like, it's just not good at all. You know, and the other thing, so I'll just jump to that right away, was that the New York Post ran an article this weekend that said that Jean-Pierre and John Kirby, who's the actual press secretary spokesperson for the Pentagon, I think I have that right, and she is for the White House, they share duties, and supposedly they're not getting along. But I'll tell you, you know, it's like she goes on and on about the fact she made history because she's the first black lesbian to do this. But there's a problem. She sucks. Not only that, he's brilliant at this. And, you know, and people say, oh, he lies. Yeah, but you have to understand, lying is part of his job. How good can you lie? And he's excellent at lying. I mean, really, seriously, this guy thinking on his feet, holy shit, I am so for damn impressed. And the thing is, I know how this works. A reporter throws him a question, and you can see him killing time with his mouth while his brain's trying to think of what to say. And he's excellent at that too, because he can talk for 20 or 30 seconds and not say anything. And then he will, while he's talking, he formulates his response, and then you get the real response. And he's really, really good at it. I mean, honest to God, I'd hire this guy to do anything. Now, like I said, if you want to complain about the fact he's a liar, yeah, he's a liar. He's a professional liar, and he's really, really good at lying. So, you know, it's like, I got to admit, I'm really impressed. You know, everyone seemed to be impressed with, what was the name of the woman who the circle back chick ended up on MSNBC that Jeff Meyer had the hots for? What was her name? God, I can't remember. Anyway, she was pretty good, you know, and he's better. It's like, I don't know if there's any, I don't know if we've ever seen in a long time a press secretary this good. And Kellyanne Conway, but what's the woman on Fox News? Now, what the hell's wrong with me? I can't remember her name. She's on Outnumbered. The blonde, she was pretty good too, you know. But Corinne doesn't cut it. She, you know, that's her problem is she's incompetent. I don't know. Okay, so what else do we got? Question now. Was Jeffrey Epstein a CIA asset? There's a good possibility that's true. Why? First of all, and I find this really, really fascinating, and people talk about this, but it really needs dwelling upon. Nobody knows. He was worth apparently $600 million when he died. That's a lot of money. You know, it's about $600 million more than I'm going to be worth when I die. And nobody knows where he got the money. Nobody knows how he made his money. I mean, and that's like, do you know that how many forensic accountants there are flying around all over the place? It's one of the easiest things in the world to track is money. And they can't figure out where he got his money. So the theory is that he was working for either probably our government, but maybe also possibly a foreign government. And he was a professional blackmailer, that he would get all these people, you know, involved in having sex with little girls. And then he would film it or something and say, well, now, you know, if you don't do what I say, you know, I'm going to release the tape or whatever. But you would think at some point, you know, there's enough brave sons of bitches who would say at some point, well, screw it. You go right ahead. I don't really care. And that never happened. But, you know, I do think that he'd be the perfect type of person who would be a CIA, basically a spy. He would. And that would explain a lot, you know, the fact that they never really prosecuted him when he got caught in Florida, all sorts of stuff. So, I mean, I don't know if you guys know this. Chuck Barris, the guy who hosted and invented the Gong Show in the 1970s, he claims he was a CIA operative, and no one's ever been able to either confirm or deny that. He put that in his biography. Matter of fact, wrote about it at length. And, you know, because he was such a goofball, there's people who don't believe him. But on the other hand, that's the very reason I might believe him. You know, he's the last person you'd ever suspect. And he said he was a CIA operative. You know, so I don't know. You know, interesting. And the other thing is, so you have, now they're releasing these names, 170 people, whatever it was, and most of the people on this list were supposedly, not all of them, but the majority of them were supposedly having sex with underage girls. And you know that QAnon thing that went on a few years ago, that the what was also called Pizzagate, that was related to this? They said that there's in the basement of a pizza parlor in New Jersey, the all the elites from Washington were having sex with underage girls, you know. And you know, maybe they got the details wrong, but I'm starting to wonder if really if this was, if Epstein's Island was actually what was going on here, you know. Was that a diversion, or did somebody get the details wrong, but the story basically right? You know, I'm just starting to wonder, you know, it just gets down to the thing, you know, people say, you know, and I got on the intro that I'm the king of conspiracies, you know, but the thing is, a lot of conspiracy theories are coming true. That's the problem. Now, you know, I don't know, you know, obviously the thing, the Pizzagate thing about the pizza parlor in New Jersey is bullshit, but you know, is it that really they got that the story's basically correct, but they got kind of the location wrong? I don't know. You know, I'm just throwing this out. I'm not the only person who thought of this either. You know, so, you know, you do wonder. I mean, we're at the border. We're dealing at the southern border. You know, they're breaking records every day of the number of people coming in. So as of today now, Arizona announced that through a loophole in their law, they're going to let non-citizens of the United States vote in federal elections in Arizona. Believe it or not, not state and local elections, but just the federal ones for federal officers, congressmen, senators, president. And it's not that they're going to let them vote. They're not checking. You're not supposed to, but it actually says in the law that we're not going to check to see if these people are citizens. Oh, geez, you know, wow, that's terrific. But I just wonder, and I've wondered this for a long time, like Mayorkas, they're already talking about impeaching him in the House, okay? He's not in charge here. He's just doing what he's told, you know. Either Biden personally, or more likely one of his handlers behind the scene is driving this whole thing, and Mayorkas is just doing as he's told, and I'm sure they've told him, you just keep on doing this, we'll cover your ass, we got you. And they do. You know, removing him isn't going to change anything. You know, you got this. So you want to fix this problem, it goes it's way higher than him. That's the way I look at this. All right. Nikki Haley did a town hall on Fox News last night. 2 hours ago, Ron DeSantis did his on Fox News. I did not watch either. When you count the 400 podcasts and radio shows I did for Fox News or Conk News while I worked there, even counting all of those, and we've done 70, this is the 70th show here. So we're almost pushing 500 shows here. I've only had one single sitting politician on any of these shows. And the reason, I don't want them on. I don't. You know why? They just lie. All they're going to do is lie to get reelected. That's all they do. And I'm not talking about Democrats. I'm talking about Republicans too. That all they do is lie. That's all they do. So I'm not interested in talking to them. So I don't really care what Nikki Haley has to say. Now, it seems to me that if you're going to put her against DeSantis, as you know, here's the deal. It's like it doesn't matter what politicians say. What matters is what they do. And right now, DeSantis has a better record of doing positive stuff than Haley does. I always confuse this. It was North Carolina, right, that she was governor of. You know, and she didn't do a bad job. She did a pretty good job, and she was the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, which is kind of a jokey position, and I don't know if that, you know, counts for much. I don't know. And doesn't seem like she's incompetent at all, but as far as, like, proven track record of getting stuff accomplished, especially against the bureaucracy, you'd have to give it to DeSantis. A lot of Democrats don't understand where Trump's support comes from, and that's the reason. He did a lot in 3 years. I'm accepting the last year because of COVID, but in 3 years he got a lot done, a lot of positive shit. And And people wonder why he's popular, and that's the reason. David Strom wrote about this on Hot Air today, and of course he's going to be on next week, so I don't want to, once again, I don't want to talk about this too much ahead of time. But, you know, he said the same thing. He said he's not really a Trump fan. He doesn't really, you know, he thinks, well, I don't know a single Trump supporter who doesn't think Trump is and can be rude and crude. Not a single one, but including me. But, you know, he said, you know, that you can't, for all the crap that, that Trump, you know, seems to baggage, he seems to drag with him wherever he goes, you can't ignore the fact that 3 years of running the government, he did a really good job. And that's true. And for some reason, the liberals do not seem to understand this. They just think, I had a friend of mine who told me he actually thought that Trump was hypnotizing people through the television set. I'm not kidding. He was not joking. That he was, that people, that he was hypnotizing people to follow him. No, that's not what's going on here, you know? Oh, the other thing that happened this weekend is there are a whole bunch of pro-Hamas demonstrations in all sorts of major cities in the United States that tied up traffic, that tied up airport access, all sorts of crap. Now, if you're trying to influence people, is this the way to do it? But, you know, now, to their point, the people running these demonstrations, they're not trying to influence people. They're really trying to be a pain in the ass because they're trying to get noticed. Well, we've noticed them. So if you're not, if you can't change people's minds, first of all, here's the thing, and this is one of the reasons they're doing this. They want to the public to perceive them to be a much larger minority than they really are, and they aren't. There's not a lot of people. All the polls taken for the last 2-3 months have indicated that there aren't a lot of people that agree with this point of view in America. They're a distinct minority, but they're trying to appear much bigger than they really are. But the other thing is you're not going to grow your minority what's the word I'm looking for? Jesus. Infuriating people. You're not going to. It's not going to happen. So if you're infuriating people, then what are you doing? And all I can think of is, most of these people have an emotional problem. I'm not kidding. They do not know why they're doing this. They're just doing it out of sheer emotional impulse. And who does that? Children. Children do that. Well, excuse me. I've got to wet the whistle a little bit. Oh, that's good. Water's good sometimes, man. I like it. I'm pro water. No, that's the reason they're doing this. They're doing this. It's literally it's an emotional response for them. And this is basically what we've been seeing from the left for the last 6 years. You follow these memes online of all these women screaming and stuff like that. There's classic pictures of this stuff. But the thing is, that's really the way they think. They're not going to change anybody's mind, and if anything, the opposite. They're actually going to, you know, you step in front of traffic long enough and block people from going about their business, and you do that enough times, and people are going to start not to like you. You think? Duh. Okay, well then, you know, so you're doing it to let off steam, apparently. There's no other, you know, you have to get out, you know, scream from the hilltops the fact that that Israel's killing people in Gaza. Okay, fine. You know, we know that, all right? Try to give me a reason why I should support what you're doing. But they won't and can't. There's no reason other than the fact you're killing innocent people. Yeah, but so did Hamas. Hamas is killing innocent people. And also, here's the real crucial part. They've said they won't stop. That's the difference. Hamas has declared in no uncertain terms, very publicly, that they're not going to stop doing this. Well, then what choice do they have? You gotta eliminate all of them. You don't have a choice, you know? I mean, I just find that the other thing I find hilarious is that a lot of people on the left is trying to equate the Israelis with the Nazis, which is, of course, you know anything about history. Well, that doesn't fly. No, No. Israelis are not the Nazis, or Israelis are the anti-Nazis. No, you got that? No, the Nazis killed the Jews. You see how that works? No, I don't think. No, you're not going to know. That analogy doesn't fly at all. That's not going to work. The New York Post announced yesterday, or this weekend, excuse me, that 20% of all employers say Gen Zers are bringing parents to job interviews. What? What? You know, I've gone on and on and on about how the losers, how these kids are losers, you know? And, you know, my wife is saying, oh, Jim, you know, you're just a curmudgeon, you know, blah, blah, blah. They all think that, you know, all generations think, no. These kids really are losers. No, there's a difference. And I'll tell you, we were losers when I was 20 years old. And these kids are way, way worse. It's like, this is real. They're bringing 20% of them. 20% of them bringing parents to job interviews. 20%. What the fuck? That's nuts. That's crazy shit. You know, yeah. Sounds good. All right. A door plug blows off an Alaska Airlines flight this weekend. And here's the reason I'm not talking about this. Of course, I am talking about it, but I'm not going to dwell on it. The reason is, all right, you got to think about this. I've said this before, and also I got to talk to Jazz about this tomorrow or Thursday because he knows about this shit a lot. So there's 35,000 commercial airline flights in the United States every single day. Every single day. That adds up to 10 million a year. There's 10 million commercial flights in the United States every single year. Not internationally, just within the U.S. Got that? And we lose one airplane in every 20 million flights. We lose one airplane every 2 years, or one half of an airplane every year. And not only that, the amazing thing is now, more and more, even though planes hardly ever crash ever, statistically, we're saving more and more people. More and more people are living through plane crashes because it turned out, they figured this out years ago, that the primary thing that was killing people inside the airplane when it crashed was not the crash itself, but the fact that the upholstery, the toxins in the upholstery when set on fire, were basically smothering people, asphyxiating people. And they fixed that. And since they fixed that, a lot less people are dying from plane crashes. Now, you'd think if you're in a fucking, you know, aluminum tube and hitting the ground at 500 miles an hour, you'd think that would be it. But man, it's amazing. Human bodies are really incredible. You know, people live through this stuff more than you think. But anyway, that's my point. We lose one airplane every 2 years. So, okay, so the door blows off of this one. So how often does that happen? I actually had to look this up. So I don't know if you guys remember this. The Aloha Airlines flight 243 in April 1988, where the whole top of the airplane sheared off. And one flight attendant actually got sucked out. Now, it's amazing. 66 people on that airplane got hurt, but only one person died. And I don't know if you've ever seen the pictures of this. This is not pretty. The entire top of the airplane literally just peeled off. It's horrifying to look at. But the reason I brought that up is that's 1988. This shit hardly ever happens, ever, ever. And not only that, in the flight that happened this last weekend, the door came off, but nobody got hurt, you know? And it's scary. Yeah, I'm sure it's scary, but nobody got hurt. You know, and so the weekend before, I can't remember. I know it was a Boeing 737. But a window blew out, and same thing. It just so happened nobody was sitting next to it. Now, if you're sitting right next to one of those windows when they blow out, you're probably going to get sucked out, even if you have your seatbelt on. What happened in this thing with the door and the Alaska Airlines flight this weekend is a kid sitting close to the door. He was the closest person sitting to the door. It's not really a door. It's called a door plug. It's where an emergency exit door goes if you need one, and they didn't need one on that flight. So they literally just put a plug into that space to finish out the wall of the tube. And when that thing blew out, it blew his shirt got sucked out, which is amazing. He didn't, but his shirt actually got sucked out of the hole. So he's shirtless on the flight now, but nobody got hurt. So my point is, I mean, it is astonishing how safe this is. I don't understand how we even do this, because these machines are awfully, awfully complicated, you know, and at this point they cost about $100 million a piece, you know. So we have perfected this, and it's actually a fairly primitive way to travel, because you're literally talking about pushing an aluminum tube through space. And also, if you stop pushing it, it crashes. You know, these things can't hover, you know, they can't stop. But now, because everyone's, you know, wants to get where they're going as fast as possible, no one's interested in stopping. So there's that. But I mean, that is the point here, you know. It's, you have to, you need about, depending on the airplane, about 140, 150 miles an hour on the runway to get to actually take off, you know. And the cruising speed for most jets in the United States is about 500 miles an hour. And so you're flying at 500 miles an hour. And if you stop flying 500 miles an hour, well, you're gone. You're gone. You know, and that's actually the, one of the things about the UFOs that have impressed the pilots. You know, people talk about how fast they go. But no, the other thing that's impressed them is how slow they can go. And that is, you know, like Fravor said this about several of the quote-unquote tic-tac things he saw. He said, if a regular airplane flew that slowly, it would fall out of the sky. And he's right, it would. That's the thing. You can't slow down. That's not the way aerodynamics works. And so we have perfected this to an ungodly degree. And then people say, well, okay, so you're going to fly all the way across the galaxy from Zeta Reticuli at 37 light years away, and you finally make it into Earth's atmosphere, and you crash your goddamn spaceship, you know? Well, why would you do that? And that's because, do you realize how complicated this is? It doesn't matter how advanced your technology is. It doesn't. Things go wrong, and it's like playing football, you know? You're going to throw an interception. People, you know, the balls bounce off people's hands and shit happens, and sooner or later, you're going to throw an interception. That's all there is to it. You launch enough fucking spaceships, you know, that are flying at warp drive or whatever the hell they're doing, you know. I've gone in a long diatribes of how supposedly Bob Lazar explains how these things fly, but you're gonna lose a few. And then especially if I'm of the opinion that there's way, way more of these things flying around in our airspace than anybody actually knows. That's I think that because of a couple things. I've mentioned this before, the photographic evidence of people who aren't looking for UFOs who end up photographing them anyway, and especially local television news crews. I've talked about this before, about the fact they go out to a shoot, you know, they go to the state fair where the fuck they're going, you know, some, you know, or, you know, the water skiing event or whatever it is, you know, they're setting up their cameras and they run their cameras while they're, you know, the reporter's fixing his hair or whatever the hell she's doing. And then they get back to the station to edit the footage, and it's like, oh my God, what's that? And this happens constantly. I mean, on a daily basis, all across the United States, there's local television news crews who end up photographing UFOs, and they, to the point where they don't even know what to do about it anymore. They don't basically report any of this shit. It happens so frequently. And supposedly, you know, this is one of those things, this is entirely speculative now, but the people who say they've been abducted by the aliens say the aliens have told them they have the ability to quote-unquote cloak their spacecraft. And also, David Grush, I think it was, said during one of the congressional committee meetings, he said that the CIA not only knows that, but they have figured out how to jam the cloaking devices, supposedly. So, you know, I mean, who knows? But the fact of the matter is, if you're flying, you know, just because you have the technology to fly 37 light years across time and space doesn't mean nothing's going to happen. Bad happen at the end. It doesn't. And it doesn't matter how good you are at it or how long you've been doing it. I mean, I want to point out to you, getting back to the thing about regular aircrafts, we've only been flying airplanes for 100, as of last month, 120 years. December 1903. So 120 years, and we've basically been flying jets since 1960. I mean, it was actually a little bit before that, but I don't know if any of you know this, if you ever looked into this, but there was what was the name? It was the British Airways, and it was the Comets, right? And I can't remember who made the Comet aircraft. It was a commercial passenger jet, the first one, but they lost all sorts of them. They just exploded in midair. Matter of fact, I have a late friend of mine who lost his girlfriend on one of those flights in 1955. Airplane just blew up. Nobody knew what. And so they were flying jets before 1960, but it was kind of dicey. It wasn't until Boeing came out with the 707 that it became really kind of stabilized. So basically, we've only been doing that for like 70 years. So it is astonishing how safe it's gotten. Okay, speaking of safe, Michelle Obama goes on a podcast this week and says that she's terrified of the possibility that Joe Biden will lose. So like I put in the show notes for the descriptions on Rumble today, did it occur to her that we're terrified of what happens if he wins? Did that occur to her? And also, it gets back to the other thing, too. And this is all circular now. So we got to talk to Sabrin about this tomorrow. Like, what happens if the economy completely freaking crashes over the next, 10 months before the election? Well, first of all, I think Biden would definitely lose then at that point. I mean, you have to think about the, and I don't know, a lot of you weren't alive then. You know, I'm thinking about Jimmy Carter in the 1970s. Now, on paper, Carter was probably a perfect presidential candidate. You could not come up with a better guy. Guy had like an IQ of like 160 or something. He was a nuclear physicist in the Navy. He actually ran the engines, the nuclear reactors on submarines. He did that. He started an extremely successful business. If I'm correct, Carter Farms is still to this day the number one manufacturer of peanuts in the United States, I think, still. He doesn't run it anymore, but it still is. And he was governor of Georgia very successfully. You had a guy here who had the pedigree, as good a pedigree as anybody who to ever become president. And his presidency did not go well. And that's unfortunately an understatement. Everyone seemed to think he was a great guy personally, and also a lot of it was bad luck too. He was, but the difference between that and what's going on now, and I've said this before, but I think it's really important. Carter acknowledged the fact things weren't going well. He was constantly asking people, his staff, what can we do to improve? He was constantly trying to figure out what to do better. And like I said, he was kind of hampered by bad luck. And the other thing, and Murray Sabrin pointed this out to me, and this is very cool. I didn't know this. I did know this, and that is Jimmy Carter's one of his few great achievements is that he deregulated the airlines. So you have to understand, everyone talks about the golden age of flying. Before 1978, before Carter did this, the reason it was the golden age of flying is because the government, the federal government, set the prices on all airplane tickets. So if you got six different companies flying from New York to L.A., right, the ticket prices were exactly the same. You could not set the prices. So all you had to differentiate yourself from one company to the other is your service, which is the reason service completely ruled during this era. You know, you had the incredible food, you had the stewardesses, and they were stewardesses then, in the short skirts and the really fashionable outfits. You know, everything looked pretty. You know, these companies bent over backwards to serve the customers because it was the only way they could differentiate between one from another. So what Carter did in 1978 is he took off that restriction. So that the companies could set their own prices. So two things happened then. The prices fell dramatically, and the level of service fell dramatically too. So now we're at the point where now you can fly across, on a good day, you can fly across the country for $200. But it's, like my sister, the travel agent said, it's the Greyhound bus service of the 21st century. That's what it is. You know, it's basically now you're in a bus inside a tube that's flying through the air. So, you know, you could make a point that maybe it's not an improvement, but there's a lot of people who disagree because, I mean, pre-1978, flying was quite expensive. I flew with my mother across the ocean to see our family in Eastern Europe when I was five, and I did some calculation recently and came to the conclusion that those tickets, adjusted for inflation today, would have been about $20,000 each, and we were not a rich family. So the fact that my father shelled out for that, who was notoriously cheap, he shelled out so we could do this, was pretty freaking amazing. But that's a lot of money, you know. It's like you wouldn't fly across the ocean for $20,000. Now you can do the same flights about $1,000. That's amazing, but it's true, you know. So yeah, at any rate, why didn't I bring that up? Because we're talking about the economy going to hell. That's the reason, right? So anyway, I was talking about Jimmy Carter. Excuse me. I had to retrace my steps there. So yeah, Carter's presidency didn't go well, and he is largely being considered the worst president in the modern era. The modern era pretty much starts in 1962, and now Joe Biden is going to beat him. But the primary difference between these two guys, like I said, is Carter acknowledged things weren't going well. Biden either refuses to acknowledge it or honestly doesn't know. And I can't tell which it is. I'm leaning toward the former. I think he refuses. I think he's delusional. But on the other hand, these people, when I mean these people, I mean the people in the administration, they're in such a bubble personally that I don't think that, you know, they've been going on and on about how great the economy is. Now, the economy is not good. I mean, they can claim all they want, but the thing is, they don't feel the ramifications of it because they go grocery shopping and they don't care. It doesn't matter that they're my grocery bill here in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, has gone up about 50% in the last year. Yeah, in 1 year, it's gone up about 50%. Everything that used to be bought. I'll give you just an example. I buy at Target. I buy the little 3 packs of Nestle's cookies. They were for years 99 cents. Now they're $1.49. Like, and this is, I mean, I don't have to tell you. If you go shopping, you know this. But the thing is, these people are so affluent that they don't feel the effects of it. So they don't even notice, you know? So I don't know. But there's no doubt now at this point that between the economy and the southern border, which is almost certainly deliberate, but still, it's not going to be treated that way by history. Biden is easily outdoing Carter as the worst president ever in modern history, and maybe ever, at least since the Civil War, anyway. And speaking of that, I have to address this too. Did you see the ad? On January 5th, last week, last Friday, the Biden administration campaign committee released their first ad for Biden's reelection campaign. Now, the ad is weird, and everyone acknowledges that. But the thing that, and there was some talk on this on like The Five or some show on Fox News somewhere that I saw about the fact. So, I mean, I'm not the only person who noticed this, but still, it was Jimmy Fallon on Fox News. He was talking about this, but he's right. The really weird thing about the ad is Biden's narration of it. He's very obviously slurring his words. He can't talk. And then you think, like, and Fela brought this up, and he didn't have to. I knew this too right away. You have to understand, he had an unlimited number of takes to do it. I mean, this wasn't live. It wasn't spontaneous. So, you know, how many times did he do this before they said, okay, all right, Mr. President, thanks, that's enough, because they literally gave up, and he can't talk. I mean, that's the thing that's really weird about the whole thing, is his narration. I mean, he sounds like a drunk person, and what the fuck? You know, so you mean you got an unlimited number of tries, and you're going to get it right? I mean, shit, which means you can't talk. That's all I can gather from that, is you can't string words together. I mean, it's really, really weird. That was my take. Everyone else talked about the imagery about, you know, the Nazi white supremacy shit. Okay, you know, that's all bullshit. Yeah, I understand. But the little hidden meaning in there is the fact that the president couldn't even narrate his own goddamn commercial. He couldn't even do it. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm like a performer at heart or something. I notice that sort of shit. But it really is telling of something. If you had an unlimited number of takes and still... Not only that, can't get it right, but get it horrendously wrong. Even at your best, something's wrong. You know, that's all there is to it. All right, here's another thing, talking about the economy being so good. It turns out that in 2023, the employment records, the jobless claims were overstated by 439,000 jobs. And the reason is because, and I brought this up on a previous broadcast a couple months ago, about the fact that the General Accounting Office, is it, that does this? They ended up revising the monthly figures a month later, and I think in like every time except once they revised them down. So in other words, that the figures were all almost always overly inflated, and one of the reasons they're overly inflated is because they're not counting the fact that the primary employer during this period of time in the last year, 2023, was the federal government, was accounted for roughly 25% of, depending on what month it was, but roughly 25% of all jobs, all people employed during the entire year. This is the thing. We are running this bloated bureaucratic machine that we can't afford, and so we're printing fake money to pay for this, and do we need that many people? I mean, the last count I saw, I don't know if this is what it is now, the last one I saw is there's 4 million non-military employees that work for the federal government of the United States. Now, that's over 1% of the population. So it's about one out of, what, every 80 people works for the federal government. Now, you may not think that's a lot of people, but there's 330 million people in this country. We got 4 million people working for the government? I mean, shit. Do we need that many? No, we don't. No. I'm guessing you could get rid of half of them in a day and nothing would change at all. There'd be no decrease in performance or anything like that. Of course, that's true of most major corporations, too. You have to understand the reason they ended up being overemployed is usually you get middle managers, people who are running divisions, who will have a sense of power, and a lot of people equate their power, the number of people that work underneath them, so they end up overly hiring. They hire at the maximum their budget will allow, even though these people don't have any real purpose or work to do, you know. So, okay, this came up. This was fascinating, just absolutely fascinating. HotAir.com wrote about this, about the fact that who said this? Oh, the Daily Signal, a woman named Virginia Allen wrote a piece called "Climate Change Could Be Caused by the Earth's Orbit." Duh. We've been saying that on this show. Well, you know, if you go back to Kong News for 4 years, and what do you think Patrick Moore was talking about on the show too? You know, that the primary reason the temperature of the Earth is rising is because of the variance in the Earth's orbit. Yes, around the sun. That's the reason. It has nothing to do with you running your stupid car, nothing to do with you running your gas stove, nothing. It's nothing. It has to do with the Earth going around the sun. That's the reason. Now, I'm a climate change debunker. It's the biggest single grift ever bought around to the American public. But that said, here's the deal. There's a kernel of truth to it, and I've acknowledged this many, many times. The Earth is warming up. I don't know a single scientist that disputes that. That's not the problem. The problem is why? Why is the Earth warming up? No, it's not because we're putting CO2 into the atmosphere. As a matter of fact, CO2 is actually a good thing. It has to do with the Earth's orbit around the sun, and And I got to look this up, because if I'm going to talk about this, I should know this because it's a crucial point. It's named after a Russian scientist, starts with an M, but he calculated the fact that the rest of the solar system, especially the large planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, affect the orbit of the Earth around the Sun the same way the Moon affects the tides on Earth. It's the same circular sort of phenomena. So the temperature on the Earth rises and falls based on the pull of these planets or the rest of the solar system on the Earth itself, and it pulls it a little away from the Sun, and then it doesn't pull it away from the Sun, so it gets a little closer, and that changes the temperature on Earth. That's what the primary driver of the change is. It has nothing to do with anything we're doing. It's all bullshit. Yeah, well, wow, that's great. So I'm glad you noticed that. Yeah, fuck you. Oh, man. Okay, hold on, I'm just going down my list here. Well, okay, I tell you what, we're going to run our commercial now because I got what I call a part three or the C block, which is non-political news. So I want to show you this. I'm going to show you this here. This is the front page of Conk News as I grabbed it about half an hour before we went on the air here. So I'm going to scroll through this a little bit so you can see it. So you'll notice you can't see my cursor, but if you look at the bottom of most of the stories, not all of them, and I don't know why some of these aren't showing up, there's a little logo, and that if you click on the logo, you go to the front page of the news source that article came from. But all these headlines are directly from the articles themselves, as the pictures are too. There's no replacement. The photos are from the articles, and the headlines are from the articles. And if you click, and unfortunately, I found this out when Jeff was on the show last Thursday. If you click on one of these headlines, you go directly to the article. There's no interstitial page, no ads, none of that sort of shit. You just go right to the article. There's no better news source than this anywhere. I can't stress this enough. And also, you even got cartoon. You got the editor of cartoons and stuff too here also. So if this is completely free, you go to conk.com, conk.com, and check this out. They're sponsoring our show, and we really, really appreciate it. I was proud to work for this organization for 3 years, and it's running gangbusters. So check this out, and you will never be without a good news source ever again. Also, one more thing I want to point out too: they change this three times, once every 3 hours, 8 times a day, 8 times in a 24-hour day. This front page changes, and so you can go back here like 5 times a day and read entirely new shit. It's really incredible. Okay, so you want to send me a text, 408-458-5088. You want to give me a call, go to jimandnight.com/call. You know, you can call me audio only. There's an option when you get to the preview screen to actually get in the queue. You can pull down where it says camera. There's a pull down list there. And the last thing, regardless of how many cameras you have on your device, usually most people have one, but the other choice is no video. And if you choose no video, then you're just on your mic only. So you don't have to necessarily have to put your face on the screen to talk to me. And you can, like I said, you can send me a text at 404-458-5088. When we're not, the show isn't live, you can also, well, you can, no, I shouldn't say that. You can call that number too and leave me a 30-second voicemail too. Those I don't get during the show, but I will always listen to all of them. Okay, so what do we got here going on here? This is I like to talk about the media, you know. I'm kind of obsessed with the media. The Washington Post, this is from redstate.com, a Hot Air sister publication, Salem Media. They're writing the Washington Post is in big, big trouble. They laid off 600 people. They are losing money hand over fist. Hold on a second. I need some more. And people are now wondering how long Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, and he owns it personally, not through Amazon or anything like that. He is the owner of the Washington Post. How long he'll put up with this crap? I mean, it's really their I mean, their sales. I'm not gonna. I should have actually put some figures here. Their sales have gone down precipitously. They lost $100 million last year and over half of their subscribers. It's really terrible. Okay, so we got that. Then the other thing we got going on is Best Buy has announced they're going to stop selling DVDs in their stores. And this is kind of a watershed moment. So, you know, up until recently, relatively, you know, what, 10 years ago? Maybe not even that. When Netflix first started streaming in earnest, you know, the only way to see movies at home was for you to buy or rent a DVD, right? Okay, that worked out fine for quite a few years. And, of course, that's how Netflix started. They started by mailing DVDs out to people, and then you sent them back. That was the whole deal. Well, now streaming's completely taken over everything. I got to admit, I knew it was going to happen, but I'm surprised at how quickly it happened, because streaming is really dependent on relatively fast internet connections, which didn't exist even like 10, 12 years ago. So, I mean, I still remember, you know, we were running a huge website here out of Minneapolis, and this is 1996, and I remember we had one of the AT&T told us we had one of the very first DSL lines in the entire city into our office, and it wasn't that fast either. I mean, you couldn't. You know, I don't know if you can stream video off of it. I think, if I'm right, the minimum speed for streaming video of any reasonable quantities, I think, is 2 megabits, if I'm right. And most people have, like, you know, a standard connection right now is about 30 to 60 megabits. So, I mean, that's the thing. And the speeds went up very, very quickly. So now everything is streaming. And so they're going to stop selling the DVDs. They stopped selling CDs quite a long time ago. And of course, that all changed the, you know, Spotify and Pandora changed the music market. And now to the point where it's unless you're a huge star like Taylor Swift or, you know, I don't know who else it would be. It's really terrible. I was for many years a disc jockey, and I knew popular music backwards and forwards. Now I don't know shit, and I don't care. And I gotta admit, I think most of it sucks, including Taylor Swift. You know, I was going to write David Strom at Hot Air an email, and I'll talk to him about this next week about that, because he wrote an article about Taylor Swift recently. You know, about how, you know, well, she's a very talented person. No, she isn't. I shouldn't say this. I got to be very precise on this. She's a very, very smart woman, and she's easily one of the best arena performers who's ever lived. I mean, it's like, you can't deny the fact that she can entertain 60,000 people in a giant room, and she can do it in spades. And it's amazing. And she's talented and smart about everything, except she can't write music. And what's my point to that is, all right, she's arguably the biggest musician on the planet right now. You fast forward 60 years ago to the Beatles, and you tell me whose music is better. And I don't think that's a generational thing. I studied music theory thoroughly, and that is some music's just better than others. And I don't think she's particularly good at it. I don't think it's like Madonna. The only thing Madonna will be remembered for 50, 60 years from now is they will probably play the Vogue music video on a loop at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. That's probably it. You know, now, do you know how many musicians were wildly famous in the 20th century that you've never even heard of? Or you have heard of them, but you've never heard their music ever? Here's a case in point, Rudy Valli. Now, you've probably, you know, maybe seen Rudy Valli in an old movie or something like that. He was the single most popular musician of his era. He was wildly popular, and that music completely, utterly sucks by any standard, imagination at all. It's terrible. Another is Perry Como. Perry Como was hugely popular in the 1950s. His music is completely forgotten now. You know, I mean, you know. I mean, the comparison between him, you could say Dean Martin, but Dean Martin, his music is not forgotten, partly because he was a member of the Rat Pack, but also because he has one of the great natural voices in music history. I mean, he really was a really good singer. He wasn't as good a musician. He didn't know what to do with his voice as good as Sinatra did, but he was still, nonetheless, he had a very, very good and distinctive voice. So, but no, the same thing's going to happen. Taylor Swift basically took her high school diaries and set them to music. And the only reason, the reason she's wildly popular is because there's 1 bazillion 16-year-old girls who are late. That's the reason. So, and then you got that thing called sympathetic moms, you know, who love the fact that their daughters are into something that's so relatively wholesome, so they support it too, and it just goes on and on, and you know. But I give her props for she's enormously gifted as a performer, and she's also a very, very smart businesswoman. She is, so she deserves her money. But no, music history, no, not gonna look well on this. So anyway, comparison I was making to DVDs. But yeah, so now we got streaming. The problem, John Nolte writes about this on Breitbart, the problem with movies streaming off of the services is that they could be permanently altered and we'll never know. And he's right. You know, there's scenes they've cut out of all sorts of movies because they were racist or, you know. And then you think, well, yeah, okay, some of them are racist, but it was the product of their time. You know, can't you just put a little billboard up? Now, I got to give Disney credit. This is what they're doing now. They've changed their mind about this. Now they put a billboard, a placard in front of the movie saying, you know, there's parts of this movie that might be racist, but, you know, it was a part of this era, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's fine. You've explained it. And then they run the whole thing. And that's the way it should be handled. But there's no guarantee that other movie studios and movie owners will do the same thing. There isn't. All right, last thing I got here is that the Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines is going to launch the largest ship ever built, the Icon of the Seas. It holds, now get a load of this, it holds 10,000 people. Now, I don't know how many of you have cruised. I've cruised a lot. My sister was a travel agent, and because of that, I got buku tours, either really cheap or sometimes even free, because they give these things away to travel agents, and my sister got way more free trips than she could ever handle, so she gave them to me and my wife. So my wife and I, we have traveled all over the world for almost nothing. It's really amazing. My sister just retired last month, so we're not going to be doing this anymore. But at any rate, yeah, if you, those of you who have done this, you know, up until, you know, relatively recently, the average cruise ship probably carried about 2,500 people. You know, this one, 7,500 passengers, 2,500 crew, 10,000 people. And it's huge. I've seen pictures of it. It's absolutely fucking enormous. So it's launching out of Miami, I think, in a couple of weeks or something like that. It did its sea trials, and it was built in Finland, and they sailed across the ocean blue, well, across the Atlantic. So it's running. it's amazing. First of all, the older ships used to be like hotels on the water. Now they're like cities on the water. I'm just amazed. My wife went off with some of her family members. I could not go. About a year ago, she was on one of these very large ships. I think she said hers held 7,000 or 8,000 people. And she said she was expecting not to like it, and she said she liked it a lot because there's so much to do on there. Anyway, God bless them. That's pretty cool. And finally, I'm just going to bring this up tomorrow for the C block for part 3. We're going to talk a little bit about some news about D.B. Cooper, believe it or not. Now, we had Chris Williamson on the show from the Vanish podcast. He wrote a book on D.B. Cooper. He was on, I think, in October or something like that. This new news, a guy named Eric Aldous, who has been one of the premier researchers of D.B. Cooper for years, So this is, I'm going to just give you a heads up here, but we'll talk about it more tomorrow night. The D.B. Cooper left behind one single piece of evidence, and that's his clip-on tie. He jumped out of that airplane at 10,000 feet wearing a business suit and regular wingtip loafers and a parachute and a bag of money, okay? And also, it was pouring rain, and in some places on the ground, it had started snowing, so they don't really know where he landed. They know about where he jumped out, at the point where he jumped out, but they have really no idea where he landed. So, I mean, it was formidable, and everyone's always kind of assumed he didn't live through this. But, you know, they find, in 1980, they found $5,000 as money on the Columbia River. So, they still don't know if he lived through this or not. But the thing is, he left behind on the airplane one single piece of evidence, and that is his clip-on tie. He also left a bunch of smoked cigarette butts, but the FBI threw those away because in 1971, there was no DNA retrieval. No one knew what that was. That didn't come around until the 1980s. And even then, it was pretty bad and pretty coarse. So they threw the butts away, even though now they could have easily identified him using that. But they still have the clip-on tie. And what they couldn't do in the 1970s, he jumped in 1971, the day before Thanksgiving. What they can do now is they can pull microscopic particles off of the tie. And apparently they've pulled about 100,000 off of them. And all is figured out that a few of those particles were not only of exotic alloy metals, but of stuff that was actually patented. And so he has traced those metals back to one single shop and one single company in Philadelphia. And he thinks now, he says he's still investigating it, but he thinks now that he maybe knows who D.B. Cooper was. So anyway, we'll talk about that more tomorrow. I want to thank you folks for listening. It's always a pleasure. I want to thank Conk News for sponsoring this fiasco. That's Conk News at conk.com, conk.com. Check that out when you get a chance. Best news aggregator on the planet, period. I'm Jim Peters, and we'll be tomorrow night. We're Murray Sabrin is our guest. I need some more water, but we're just gonna cut this. I'll cut and I'll drink. I'll drink later. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie, and good night to you wherever you are. I'll see you tomorrow night. Thanks. Take care.